Welcome to this Essential Knowledge Update podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners. I'm Sally Higginbottom and today I'm interviewing Dr. Arsalan Zamir, a GP in Watford with an interest in sports and exercise medicine. Hello.
Hello, Sally.
So, what's this module based on?
So this module is based on the NICE guidance NG65, and it looks at the diagnosis and management of spondyloarthritis with a key focus on making sure that we try and make early diagnosis, as late diagnosis has implications and worse outcomes.
That's great. So let's start right back at the beginning. What is spondyloarthritis?
Spondyloarthritis, it's a group of inflammatory arthritis that can have a range of manifestations, but these predominantly affect either the spine or the peripheral joints.
So it's not osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis, it's the other big group of arthritis conditions, is that right?
That's correct. And what the guidance has provided for us is categorization of this particular group of arthritis. So there are two main categories, the first of which is termed axial. And this refers to its radiographic axial spondyloarthritis, synonymous with what we're familiar with in terms of ankylosing spondylitis, or non-radiographic axial spondyloarthritis. And then the peripheral aspect of it, we would otherwise be familiar with examples of psoriatic arthritis, reactive arthritis, and enteropathic spondyloarthritis. But suffice to say, there is a lot of overlap in the symptom profile of each of these areas. And it could well be that patients that have spinal arthritis may well have peripheral symptoms and vice versa. And what's particularly useful in this guidance is more of a reminder and a recap for us that spondyloarthritis can often be misdiagnosed as mechanical low back pain, and that often leads to delays in treatment. And similarly, peripheral spondyloarthritis may often be seen as unrelated joint or tendon problems. Often with different joints being affected, we may not make that relationship.
So whether or not it's radiographic or non-radiographic disease presumably means you can see it on an x-ray or you can't see it on an x-ray.
That's correct. So there may be changes that would be suggestive of radiographic axial spondyloarthritis, whereas there may be presentations that are either early on in the disease course or that there aren't those changes seen on the x-ray images.
But the important learning point for me there was that a normal x-ray of your sacroiliac joints does not exclude an axial spondyloarthritis.
Precisely, that's absolutely correct.
Okay, there's a lot of talk in the module about enthesitis. What's an enthesitis?
Yeah, so this is a particular term that we don't really use on a day-to-day basis, but refers to some patients who may have inflammation of sites of ligament or tendon insertion to bone. And if I was to give you the examples of Achilles tendonitis or plantar fasciitis, then that would bring it more to life for us. And the difficulty is that we often view these entities in isolation and probably not enough considering them in association with possible other features of spondyloarthritis and therefore make that link.
So it's the patient who comes in with repeated different tendon-related problems, we might think, that then turns out to have a more systemic disease that we need to spot.
That's correct.
Okay, let's think about some patients. What symptoms would make you think about their spondyloarthritis rather than very, very common mechanical low back pain?
So the sorts of things that would make us think of, let's say, an inflammatory spondyloarthritis would be an insidious onset of the pain, possibly waking during the second half of the night because of their symptoms. They may have buttock pain. Classically, the symptoms may improve with movement, and if they were to take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, they may see an improvement within 48 hours. Other aspects that may make us think of spondyloarthritis would be a first-degree relative who's had a condition, the patient themselves having had a current or a past episode of arthritis, current or past enthesitis, or current or past psoriasis. So these different factors building up should lower our threshold for a possible diagnosis.
If we think about it, what investigation should we carry out?
As you alluded to earlier, we may come across investigations that would be termed normal, but that would not preclude a diagnosis necessarily. Having said that, there are investigations that could be helpful. Blood testing that might include acute phase proteins such as CRP and ESR could be considered. In addition, x-rays could be helpful, but we've also discussed that they may well be normal. And if there is local access to MRI scanning, then that would be the gold standard to be going for axial spondyloarthritis.
And what would you request on the MRI? Would it be an MRI spine, or do you specifically ask for the sacroiliac joints?
Yes, so if we're considering axial spondyloarthritis, then yes, it would be the lumbosacral spine that we'd be requesting.
Okay, and peripheral spondyloarthritis, how would that present?
So a typical story may be of a young 20 to 30-year-old male who might have noticed a swollen, painful finger. He may have had an episode or two of, as you said, tendonitis, plantar fasciitis. There may be skin or nail changes consistent with psoriasis. And he may have had a knee or ankle swollen joint. So those sorts of features may make us think about a peripheral spondyloarthritis.
Okay. There was a classic sort of spondyloarthritis I remember learning about at medical school associated with infection. We used to call it Reiter's syndrome. Is that still a thing in this classification?
So Reiter's syndrome, you're right, was associated with infection, and it used to be a triad of arthritis, urethritis, and a conjunctivitis. And that was then superseded by the term reactive arthritis, which you're absolutely correct, would come under this category of peripheral spondyloarthritis. And this reactive arthritis develops after an infection where the specific organism can't be recovered from the joint. And that's distinct from septic arthritis as an entity. So the organisms may be any of Campylobacter, Clostridium, Salmonella, Chlamydia. And usually you get an arthritis a couple of weeks after the onset of the gastrointestinal or genitourinary infection. And it's typically an asymmetrical arthritis that might affect the knees or the ankles. And what's quite useful to remember is that if there's a dactylitis, which is a swelling and inflammation of the whole finger or toe, that's particularly suggestive of a reactive arthritis or indeed psoriatic arthritis.
And psoriatic arthritis we do see quite commonly, I think, but presumably the clue is the fact that the patient's got psoriasis. Is there anything else we need to look for?
Yeah, the difficulty with psoriasis itself, in fact, is that it can be subtle, and a lot of patients may not really pay much attention to it. A bit of dry skin on the scalp, a bit of dry skin on the elbows. So it's something that we need to look quite keenly for. And in patients where we're suspecting new-onset spondyloarthritis, it's quite useful for us to have a good check of their skin, looking at their nails for the nail changes, the scalp and the hairline, and also natal cleft and groin areas are quite a sort of common place for psoriasis to be seen.
So the patient doesn't have to have severe psoriasis to have the psoriatic arthritis?
That's correct.
It could be quite subtle. Okay, so who gets a referral and how urgently?
So there's actually a few categories that they've gone into detail about that need referral. In essence, we should be starting to be thinking about a spondyloarthritis assessment if somebody who is under the age of 45, has developed low back pain, which has lasted for more than 3 months. There are then certain things that we should be looking out for. And these are the criteria that we need to look at either for doing an HLA-B27 test or a referral. So the criteria include symptoms that started before the age of 35, waking before early morning, so the second half of the night, buttock pain, improvement of the symptoms with movement, improvement within 48 hours, a first-degree relative with spondyloarthritis, current or past arthritis or enthesitis or psoriasis. Now, if, let's say, there are four of these criteria that are met, then that would warrant a referral to a rheumatologist. If there are three criteria that are met, this is the particular category that NICE would recommend an HLA-B27. And if that was to come positive, then that would warrant a referral to a rheumatologist. It then goes on to look at if these criteria are not met and we've still got clinical suspicion, then it's important to reassess the patient to see if they've got any new signs or symptoms that would then upgrade them in terms of criteria met.
Okay, so it's a counting your symptoms plan to find out who gets to go and see a rheumatologist. But what are the treatment options if someone does get referred?
In broad terms, we can categorise the treatment into either pharmacological or non-pharmacological. So if we start with the axial spondyloarthritis, we can quite happily start them on non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, obviously weighing up whether that's a particularly appropriate form of treatment for them or not, depending on their comorbidities. Try and use the lowest effective dose to try and control their pain, and if appropriate, to use and consider gastroprotective treatment. If they've taken a non-steroidal at a maximum dose for 2 to 4 weeks and it doesn't provide adequate pain relief, and we can consider an alternative non-steroidal. Now, if the symptoms were still refractory to this, it's then very much the domain of secondary care to decide on second-line treatment, and more often than not, that would be with biological disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, and then we often use the common acronym of DMARDs for this category of medications. One particular caveat with axial spondyloarthritis is that corticosteroids aren't really recommended to be used, whereas in contrast with peripheral spondyloarthritis, they may have a role to play. And with that category of spondyloarthritis, the DMARDs, that are the standard non-biological DMARDs, such as leflunomide and sulfasalazine, might be employed.
In a patient with a known diagnosis of one of these conditions, how would a flare present?
This is something that we may face ourselves seeing in primary care. A patient's got an established diagnosis, and invariably they will run into flares, and it's almost an inevitable part of inflammatory arthropathy. The guidance actually doesn't give specific advice on how we should be managing the flares, but it does suggest that we should have a discussion with the patients and have a plan in place as to how we may respond to a flare. So they're particularly highlighting certain situations that would warrant specialist advice. So those patients that might be having a recurrent or a persistent flare, or those that are taking the biological DMARDs, importantly, patients that might have comorbidities that might affect their treatment or management of flares. And very importantly, they've pointed out that any patient that has a uveitis, an acute uveitis, whether that's during a flare or outside of a flare, should be seeing an ophthalmologist on the same day.
Because essentially the treatment is going to be more anti-inflammatories, but there's going to be a subset of patients, I imagine, who can't take anti-inflammatories for whatever reason. I think of some of my older, more complicated patients with heart failure or whatever who can't have an NSAID. And yes, they might need a personalised plan for a flare. Is that right?
That's right. That's quite right.
Okay. So, well, what stood out for you in this module? What made you change your practice or do something differently?
Well, there's a few things that were really interesting in this module. Firstly, as with a lot of the modules that the Essential Knowledge Updates feature, there are some practical tips. And for us on a day-to-day basis, it's quite useful to remember these practical tips. So inflammatory patterns of pain, muscle and joint pains tend to be worse with rest and associated with morning stiffness. They're often insidious in onset and not confined to the young. So remembering that on a day-to-day basis. Spondyloarthritis is something that can present with either peripheral or axial symptoms, and we need to try and keep making those connections with symptoms that are presenting in different time patterns. Psoriasis, as we've mentioned previously, can be hard to spot, so it's something that we need to pay particular attention to. Patients that complain of mechanical back pain, these are usually short-lived and they don't tend to wake them up. So if patients are being woken up and having long-standing back pain, we need to be alert to them.
Excellent. Yes, I think my big learning point was the importance of thinking about patients who might have had several different apparent joint or tendon inflammatory episodes over a period of months or years, and not to see them as completely separate, but perhaps as part of a pattern, something we should look into. So thank you very much for your time, Aslan, and thank you for listening to this podcast from the Royal College of GPs.